Okay, so tonight we're going to finish up the principle of Davishim Iskavin and Psik Resha. I think next week for President's Week, we're going to take off for 1 week. I think some guys are going away. And then in Mitzvah Shem, 2 weeks, we're going to continue with the next principle, which is going to be Misasik. So let's just quickly chazer over the terminology in the sugya. In this sugya, so we're discussing a case where a person wants to do a certain activity, which in and for itself is perfectly permissible. But there's a possibility that this primary act of heter may cause a secondary consequence, which is usur. The classic case that comes up is the case of the Gemara based on Chaf Gimel Beis, where a person wants to drag a chair outside on Shabbos. Now, dragging a chair in and for itself is perfectly permissible, but there's a possibility that if you drag the chair on the earthen floor, it may create a groove in the ground, and that would represent the malacha of Chorish. And so the Shaila Sugi has become, is it permissible to do that primary act of Heter, of let's say dragging the chair, in light of the fact that it may cause the secondary effect of Isser, of let's say Malacha's Chorish? And we pass in like Rabbi Shimon that this is permissible. This is what we call a davar shein miskavin. Since you're not having kavana for that secondary act, therefore it's not considered to be prohibited. Fine. And just to review the principle of psik resha, as we've been discussing, psik resha is the big limitation to davar shein miskavin, and it teaches us that we only apply this heter in a case where it's not inevitable that the secondary effect is going to take place. It's only a possibility that the primary act is going to cause the secondary iser, but it's not inevitable. But in a case where there's a psik resha, it's definitive. If you do that primary act of heter, it's absolutely certainly going to cause a secondary act of iser. So then we treat it like there is kavana, and it's going to be prohibited. So just to the classic example we've been having is, let's say instead of dragging a light chair outside on the earthen floor, you drag a really heavy bench. And so now it's inevitable. If you drag a heavy bench, then it's certainly going to cause a groove in the ground. In this case, we treat it like there is kavana, and it's going to be prohibited. So that's just a quick chazara of the principle of davar shein miskavin, the heter of ein miskavin, and the limitation of psik resha. Yeah. So the question is being raised about ripping something out of inger. So that gets into the principle of mkalkel and the principle of malacha shein tzrich l'gufa. So that's a good question, but it's not necessarily a psik resha. You are doing karei in that case directly. Just that there are other heterim though. Okay. Fine. So now tonight's sugya is going to revolve around a Gemara in Zvachim on Tzadi Aleph on Beis. Gemara in Zvachim on Tzadi Aleph on Beis brings Shmuel, who states the following thing. He says that if a person, let's say, donates as an adava wine to the Beis HaMikdash, that he poured as a libation, so it could be poured straight onto the fires of the Mizbeach. Mizalfin Yain Agabi HaYishim, we can pour this wine that was donated to the Beis HaMikdash straight onto the fires of the Mizbeach. But the Gemara then asks on Shmuel from some other sources that indicate, there's a Tosefta, there are other sources that indicate that this is prohibited, that you can't pour the wine straight onto the fires of the Mizbeach because you're going to extinguish the fire of the Mizbeach. There's an Isser deraisa to extinguish the fire of the Mizbeach, and even partially extinguishing a partial kiboy is also prohibited. So these other sources indicate that you can't pour the wine straight onto the fire. You're violating this Isser, it's prohibited. So what's Pshan Shmuel? How could Shmuel say that this is permissible? That's the kasha the Gemara asks. So the Gemara answers that Shmuel is working with the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, that Dover She'en Miskavin is Mutter, and that's why this is going to be permissible. This is a Dover She'en Miskavin. Because let's plug in our principle here. Here this person wants to do activity A, an act which in principle is Mutter, pouring wine onto the Mizbeach. He's just trying to do the Avoda here. Of pouring wine onto the Mizbeach, perfectly permissible. It's going to cause a secondary consequence of putting out the fire of the Mizbeach. The person's not having kavana for that secondary effect. He's just trying to pour the wine onto the Mizbeach, and therefore it's permissible. This is a dover she'ena miskavin. So that's how the Gemara answers up for Shmuel. That's why this is mutter, because he's not having kavana for the secondary effect, and this is a dover she'ena miskavin. Anyway, what's your question? So that gets into how we paskin. Most Rishonim paskin like Rabbi Shimon. So usually the Stam Gemara is like Rabbi Shimon. There's a Rambam, but okay. Actually, I think even the Rambam paskin like Rabbi Shimon. But fine, okay. Fine. So now the question that the Rishonim ask in this Gemara is as follows: how could the Gemara be suggesting that this is?
got excited there.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, the mic's still good, honey? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? No? Yeah, we'll just take that loop. Let's go with that. Okay, fine. Okay. The Rishonim ask on this Gemara, they ask, how could the Gemara apply the heter of Darvish and Misgavin in this situation when this is a case of psik resha? We just got through saying we have a big limitation of psik resha, that if activity A of heter inevitably is going to cause activity B, then we don't apply the heter of Inu Misgavin, then we treat it like there's kavana, and it's going to be helpful. Well, in this situation, when you do activity A of pouring the wine onto the Mizbeach, it's inevitable that it's going to at least partially extinguish the fires of the Mizbeach. It's inevitably causing the secondary effect of the Isser. This should be prohibited based on the principle of secretion. So how could the Gemara contend that this is mutter because of Dovash and Mizgavin when this is a case of secretion and this should be prohibited? So that's the kasha the Rishonim ask on this Gemara. We have two basic approaches in the Rishonim how to deal with this issue. The first approach is the approach of the Aruch, and the second approach will be the approach of Rashi in Zvachah. Starting with the Shita of the Aruch, which is brought down in Tosis and Ksubis and Daf Vav, and also Tosis and Shabbos on Kuf Gimel. So the Aruch says that this issue in this Gemara is going to be a Raya, his famous Shita on Psik Resha Delonich. As we discussed 2 weeks ago, so we had the Aruch Shita was that not all Psik Reshas were created equal, they're not all going to be Azur, it depends. So when you do that primary act that inevitably caused that secondary effect of Isser, it's only going to be problematic if the secondary effect is pleasing to the person. If you're happy that the secondary consequence is occurring, that's what we call a psik resha denichalei. If it's a psik resha denichalei, you're happy, let's say, for some reason that the grooves are being made in the ground, so then it's going to be prohibited. But if the person is displeased by the secondary effect, or if he doesn't care about the secondary effect, that's what we call psik resha delonichalei. And in a case where it's a psik resha delonichalei, we don't treat it like there's kavana on activity B, and it's going to be perfectly permissible. So it says the Aruch, that's what's going on in this Gemara. Person in this case wants to do activity A of pouring the wine onto the fires in the Speach, which in and for itself is permissible. Inevitably, it's going to cause activity B of extinguishing the fires in the Speach. No problem, because activity B is displeasing to the person. He's not happy with the fact that the Mizbeach is being extinguished. He preferred that that not be the case. And therefore, this is a psik resha delonichalei, and this is permissible. So that is approach number one for how to deal with this issue, the shita of the Aruch. And Tosfos in Ksubos actually says that this is the ikar raya of the Aruch. The famous shita of the Aruch, the psik resha delonichalei is permissible. Where did he get a shita from? Says Tosfos in Ksubos, his ikar raya to shita was this issue in Zvachan. He was so troubled by this kasha in Zvachan that that's how he came to the conclusion that psik resha delonichalei is permissible. That is shita number one. Moving over to shita number two, our second shita is the shita of Rashi in Zvachim. And Rashi in Zvachim says something that is cryptic, but we're just going to say the words of Rashi in Zvachim, and then we're going to spend a few moments showing somewhere else where this concept also exists. And then we'll take a step back and do a conceptual analysis to understand what's going on. Rashi in Zvachim says that in this situation, when you pour the wine onto the Mizbeach, so it's possible to do it in a way where there wouldn't be a psik resha. If you pour very small droplets onto the Mizbeach, so you could do it in a way where it won't inevitably extinguish the fires of the Mizbeach. Deep in Dakos, these small droplets, if you do it right, you can avoid the psik resha. Therefore, says Rashi, even if you do it in a manner where there is a psik resha, you pour big droplets onto the Mizbeach, and so it's technically inevitable that the secondary effect is going to happen, but we don't apply the din of psik resha. We treat it like there's no kavana and it's permissible. So once again, Rashi here is setting down some type of limitation to psik resha. Rashi is saying that psik resha only applies to generate kavana if under all circumstances, activity A always causes activity B. If every single time you do activity A, it will always cause that secondary effect, then we apply the din of psik resha, then we apply kavana to that secondary act. But if you could do activity A in a way where it wouldn't cause activity B, so even if circumstantially you do it in a way where it will definitely cause activity B, we don't apply the din of psik resha.
So once again, in this situation, since you could have poured the wine in a way where it wouldn't have been a psik resha, you could have poured small droplets. Therefore, even though you don't avoid the psik resha, you do pour big droplets. It is inevitable. We don't treat it like there's kavana, and it's perfectly permissible. So that is Rashi's answer to this question. And as I say, it's going to need analysis what Rashi means to say. But for now, we're just getting the concept out. Rashi is setting down a limitation to psik resha. It only applies when it's absolute under all conditions. Activity A always causes B. Otherwise, we don't apply the din of psik resha. It's like a darshan miskavin, which is mutter. Yeah.
Why wouldn't we then consider it a separate action? Meaning, why can't you? You're saying if you could do this action in a way where it won't inevitably cause it, then it's fine. But if you're doing it in a way where it won't inevitably cause it, isn't that now a different action? Meaning,
okay, so what Yonah is basically asking is, Lyons, what's the pshat? At the end of the day, you didn't avert the psik resha. You did it in a way where pouring the wine will inevitably extinguish the fires. So why are we ignoring the din of psik resha? I think you're basically asking that.
Basically, but I'm saying you're doing it because you're doing it differently. It should be defined differently. Why are we lumping that
together? Okay, so we needed to do a conceptual analysis to understand what's going on. But for now, that's the shita of Rashi. It's a fair point. Yeah.
Does that mean the opposite is true? That if something can occur through different means, even if it's going to be done forcefully through a certain mean, since it can be done all the other means, it's not a situation? Dragging a very heavy bench over.
That's a fair question. It seems to be, so first of all, there's no actual Gemara on dragging a heavy bench, you should know. I gave that case. There's a Rishon that says it, but there's no Gemara. But assuming that would be the case, so we would say that every single time you drag a heavy bench outside on an earthen floor, it would always create a hole.
The first case of Sabresha, if you do it up in another way, then it shouldn't be a Sabresha.
100%. That's exactly what's coming out. And he's certainly emphasizing the Kiddush of the Shita. The Shita is saying we only apply Psik Resha. If every time, in all cases, you do activity A, it always causes activity B.
So is it ever possible that only one thing can cause another, that only one thing can be caused by one other thing?
We have to go through the case of Psik Resha, but this is, it's pretty, it works out most of the cases, yeah.
Sounds like it's telling.
Okay, fine. It's Mordechai Jabba the Gun. So let's get there. Good. Get the Ark of the Kiddush. Fine. So let's get to, let's just spend a few moments. Just sound surprised when I get there, okay? Fine. So let's just show another place where this yisod comes out, and then we'll take a step back and do the conceptual analysis. The second place where we find this big chiddush limiting the concept of psik resha is in a sugya in Shabbos and Kovav Amabez. So we're now going to move over to the Mishnah in Shabbos, the third Mishnah in Shabbos and Kovav Amabez, and learn it up with Rashba and the Ran. And again, we're going to see the same yisod coming out of analyzing that Rashba and the Ran. So the sugya there is discussing the malacha of tzad. Tzad is the malacha of trapping. If you trap a creature on Shabbos, that is one of our lametetz malachos. Now, the Mishnah there in Shabbos says, it discusses the following case. Let's say a person closes the door to his house, and it turns out that there's a deer inside of his house. Says the Mishnah, he's not going to violate malachet tzad. Even though when he closed the door, he trapped the deer inside his house, but for some reason, he's not violating Malachet Sad when he closes the door. That is a loose rendition of the case in the Mishnah there on Kovav Amabez. And the Mefarshim, I don't know what's the exact case in this Mishnah, why you're not violating Sad when you close the door to your house. That Lamaisa, you trapped the deer, why is it not violating Malachet Sad? So there's a discussion that we showed him how to understand the exact case in the Mishnah, but we're going to emphasize a Yerushalmi. The Rashi and the Ran both bring a Yerushalmi, which has a certain take on this halacha, which is very, very novel. And that's what we're gonna analyze right now. Starting with the Rashba. So the Rashba interprets the Yerushalmi as saying that actually, even if you know initially that there's a deer inside of your house, might not be so common in Queens, but maybe in Highland Park. If you know initially that there's a deer inside of your house and you wanna close the door to your house, as long as your objective is not to trap the deer, your objective is just to lock the door to your house, it's perfectly permissible. That's what the Yerushalmi says as interpreted by the Rashba. Now, once again, if I have a deer inside my house, and I know for a fact that there's a deer inside my house, I want to close the door to my house, not because I'm trying to trap the deer, but because of the fact that I want to lock the door to my house, it's not so safe to keep my house open. So it's perfectly permissible, lechad chila, to initially close the door to my house, even though it's going to trap the deer in the house.
Will a deer really be trapped though?
Yeah, so we're assuming, I guess, the the deer will be trapped. It's a fair point. But the assumption is the deer is... Right, exactly. So there are regulations for how enclosed it has to be from lacha sub to a fly. Well, we're going to assume that it's small, a small enough house that you can get it in one lunge, one chase, you'll get it. You do some exercise, maybe. okay, so that's the assumption on the table. So that's how the Rashba brings down the Yerushalmi. Comes along the Ran, and the Ran says that there's no such Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi never would have said such a din. Such a din is not correct al pi halacha, because in this situation, it's a psik resha. If you do activity A of closing the door to your house, it's inevitable that activity B of trapping the deer is going to take place. And since this is a case of psik resha, that should be prohibited. We have our principle once again that every time activity A always causes activity B. So even though activity A in principle is mutter, even though in principle closing the door to your house is mutter, but since it's always going to cause, since it's going to cause the secondary consequence of locking the deer inside your house and performing malachat sod, therefore this is going to be prohibited. So there's no such Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi never would have said such a thing that this is permissible. What's the case in the Yerushalmi? So the Ran gives a very different rendition of the Yerushalmi. He says that Yerushalmi is not talking about initially where you knew the deer was in your house. It's talking about post facto, that the person had no idea that there was a deer in his house. He just thought that he was closing the door to his house. And I guess after he closes the door to his house, he turns his head and he thinks that somebody else is just up late at night. And lo and behold, instead
says,
of being
deer.
Right, exactly.
The wrong deer.
Yeah. And lo and behold, instead of being his you know, his sibling or whatever, it turns out to be a very different animal, or he might whatever. a four-legged creature. And that's the case in Yerushalmi. And Yerushalmi is saying that since the person had no awareness that there's a deer inside his house, this was totally done without any malicious intent. He had no idea what was taking place. So in this situation, there was no violation of Malachat Sad. He doesn't have to let the deer out. What happened, happened, and it's permissible. So the Ran says Yerushalmi is just talking about a post facto situation where once again, you had no awareness that there's a deer inside your house. You just locked the door to your house, and lo and behold, there was a deer. Well, the Yerushalmi is saying you didn't do anything wrong. It was totally done without awareness, and you don't have to let the deer go. But never would the Yerushalmi have permitted you to initially lechatchila close the door to your house. That would be certainly prohibited based on psik resha. And so the question now becomes, how to defend the Shitas of Rashba? How could the Rashba's Yerushalmi have said such a thing? It's directly contradicting the concept of psik resha. Ben. Benny.
It's a mother or father.
What? The Yerushalmi is mother. It's mother.
And how do you say it's mother?
What do you mean?
Who said? It's lechatchila.
No, he's saying, if you know for a fact there's a deer in the house, you cannot initially close the door.
Why would mutter make sense in the case of oni?
I don't know if he's mutter or putter. Just you have to check the lashon Yerushalmi. It's just saying that in this case you didn't do anything wrong because you were unaware, and you don't have to let the animal out. You don't have to undo anything. Okay, so the question is how to defend the shita of the Rashba. Daniel, you want to say something?
Maybe I'm missing the mitzvahs. Where is the psik resha here? I mean, you did something, you weren't currently aware.
Because the cases where the person knows for a fact that there's a deer inside his house. This is the Rashba's rendition of the Yerushalmi. He knows for a fact that there's a deer inside of his house. And his goal is not to trap the deer. He just wants to close the door to his house. So he's doing activity A, which is perfectly permissible, closing the door to his house. It will inevitably cause activity B of trapping the deer. And the Rashba is saying that this is mutter lechatchila according to Yerushalmi. And the question becomes, the Ran asks, how could he say such a thing? We're violating the concept of psik resha. We should treat it like there is kavanah on activity B of trapping the deer, and that should be prohibited. That's the kash of the Ran. Yeah.
Assuming it's lenichalei.
Okay, so Shalom is asking me that it's psik resha lenichalei. Actually, if you read the Rashba carefully, he even says it when it's nichalei. It's phenomenal. Even if it's psik resha the nichalei, it's permissible. The person is pleased by the fact that he's going to have venison for dinner tomorrow night. 100% mutter. So yeah. So the question is, what's the pshat in the Rashba? Now I think Shalom's on the side of the Ran now. Okay, fine. Yeah. Correct. This is a segregation of play. It means that I'm doing activity A. I'm not intending to do activity B. If it happens, so I find it positive. I find it pleasing, but that's not my kavan. I'm not intending to do it. So in that situation, typically it's totally usher. In this case, it's Rashba, it's mutter. Question is, what's going on? So the Yeshuas Yaakov wants to defend the Rashba based on the concept of Rashi in Zvaka. I put on the Marm Kohen to Shulti Gimorim, he also says it, but it's more cryptic. So that's why I'm just quoting Yeshuas Yaakov. He's much more you know, elaborate and spells it out much more clearly. He says that we can use the concept of Rashi and Tzvachan to explain this Rashba. Because what did Rashi tell us in Tzvachan? Rashi set down a limitation to the concept of Psik Resha, that we only apply the concept of Psik Resha in a situation where activity A always causes activity B. Under all circumstances, A always causes B. Then we apply the din of Psik Resha. But if you have a situation where you could do the primary act in a way where it's going to avert the Psik Resha, it's not definitely going to cause activity B. Even if circumstantially you do it in a way where it will be a Psik Resha, we don't treat it like there's Kavana and it's perfectly permissible. So plugging that into this Rashba over here, we have a case where the person wants to close the door to his house. That's activity A. Now, closing the door to your house certainly does not inevitably result in a tzeda. If there's no creature inside your house, so every time you close the door, you're not violating Malachat Tzad. In this case, circumstantially, there happens to be a deer inside his house. It happens to be that when you close the door, you're trapping the deer, but that's just circumstantial. That doesn't apply under all circumstances. Many times, you can close the door to your house, do activity A, and it's not going to cause activity B. So based on Rashi and Tzvachan, Rashi had taught us that we don't apply the din of Psik Resha in this situation. We still don't know why that is, but that was Rashi's rule, that if A doesn't always cause B, if closing the door won't always trap a deer, won't always cause Malachat Tzad, then we don't apply the din of Psik Resha, we treat it like there's no Kavana, and it's perfectly permissible. So this was our excursion now, just to find a second example of this Chiddush of Rashi and Tzvachan. And with that, we finished the basic facts here in today's sugya. So let's just quickly highlight the facts, and then we'll start the conceptual analysis. So just to chazer over, we are, you know, the first part of today's show, we're trying to analyze this Gemara in Tzvachim, which told us that you're allowed to pour the wine onto the fires in the Mizbeach because you're not having Kavana to put out the fires. You're doing activity A of pouring wine. And even though it's going to cause activity B of putting out the fire, you're not having Kavana. It's permissible. And the question became, what happened to Psik Resha? It's inevitable that A always causes B. So why is this not Usher based on Psik Resha? That should treat it like there's Kavana of putting out the fire. It should be Usher. So you have two basic approaches in the Rishonim. First approach was the Shita Za'arach, that this is a Psik Resha Delonicholai. You're not pleased by the secondary effect. You don't want the fires in this bath to happen. When there's a Psik Resha Delonicholai, we don't treat it like there's Kavana, and it's perfectly permissive. So that was Shita Ramon, the Shita Za'arach. And we pointed out that this is the famous Raya Za'arach. This is the Ikka Raya of the Ra'arach, this issue in Tzvachan. Our second approach was Shita Rashi in Tzvachan, that he's saying this cryptic idea now, that we only apply the din of Psik Resha if A always causes B under all circumstances. If every single time you do A, it will always cause B, then we apply the din of Psik Resha. But if you can do A in a way where it's not going to cause B, even if circumstantially you do it in a way where it will be a Psik Resha, we don't apply the din of Psik Resha. So since you could pour wine in a way where it's not going to put out the fire, even though you poured it in a way where it is going to put out the fire, you poured big droplets, we don't apply the din of Psik Resha. It's like a Dover She'en Miskavin and it's Mutter. That was the cryptic Shita of Rashi and Tzvachan. And before analyzing it, we just moved over to the Gemara in Shabbos and Kovav, so another place where this idea manifests. We have this Rashba Yerushalmi, he has a case where you're closing the house, the door to your house, and you know there's a deer inside your house, but your intent is just to lock the door to your house, even though it's a Psik Resha, even though it's inevitable, there's going to be a consequence of Lechet Tzad, we don't treat it like this Kavana, it's permissible. And the Ron's question was, what's the shot? Why are you ignoring the deer in Psik Resha? So Shua Siakov was plugging in this idea of Rashi and Tzvachan, that since in this case A doesn't always cause B, closing the door to your house doesn't always cause a Malachas Tzad, there's no creature inside your house, you're not going to do a Malachas Tzad as a consequence. So even though circumstantially in this case it is a Psik Resha, there is a deer inside your house, closing the door will automatically in this case do a Malachas Tzad, we don't apply the din of Psik Resha. Fine, any question on the facts before we start the analysis? Yeah, Mordechai. Yeah, okay, fine. So I'll be absolutely honest. It's a fair question. The paradigm we've had for Psik Resha is we're dragging a bench on outside and the Olam's asking a fair question, which what if you drag it on concrete? So that's why to be honest, like I say, there's no actual Gemara that says this bench case. There's one Rishon that learns a Gemara like that, but there's no explicit Gemara, universal Gemara like that. So let me just give you another example of the case of Psik Resha, where it's a Gemara, a case of Psik Resha, and this principle will hold true. The Gemara in Shabbos and Kuf Gimel has the following case. Let's say we have some endive, some type of vegetation on the ground, and I pluck it from the ground for the sake of eating. So that's activity A. I'm plucking it from the ground for the sake of eating, but it's inevitable that it's going to improve the ground. Now, improving the ground is Malachas Chorish. Any activity of improving the ground, according to many Rishonim, is Malachas Chorish. So I'm doing activity A of plucking these endives from the ground, which happens to also not be a good thing to do on Shabbos, but it's going to inevitably cause activity B of improving the ground. As a consequence, there's a meleches chorish. So it says the Gemara, this is called a psik resha, that you're going to violate chorish in this situation. That because of the fact, even you're not having kavan, you're not trying to improve the ground, you're just trying to pluck endives. Endives is one of our five species that are kosher Gemara. So if you want to get ready for a Pesach here. So you're plucking these endives from the ground, not with the intent of improving the ground. You're just doing it for the sake of getting it from Mara. As a consequence, the secondary effect is going to improve the ground. Says the Gemara, this is psik resha, it's awesome. This is universal. Every time you pluck these endives from the ground, it's going to improve the ground. And so that would be a case which is a universal situation where A always causes B. Okay, so I'm just pointing out that the bench case, it's a fair question. You're asking me, if you drag a bench on concrete, so maybe it's not going to apply. So I'm just pointing out that technically that wasn't a fair case. Yeah.
I mean, if you leave some of the endive left over, does it still improve the ground?
So there's a partial improvement. Yeah.
And also just...
You take some weeds out, not all the weeds out.
Isn't it just Yaakov then? You don't have to go that you're comparing it to the line. So you could even say that, oh, you said Rashi wouldn't have had to say, oh, you're pulling the line slower. You could have used water since that would also be true. We need to use the iron as the case.
Yeah, okay, so you're right. We've opened up a Pandora's box. And when do we call it? It's kind of like touching on Yonah's point also before, but when do we call it a different activity? Is water just, water is not called, what is a different, you know, it's, you're asking a great question. When do we call it?
You can't prevent things from coming out of your house by closing the door.
Especially in here. Yes, it's a fair question. I'm giving the primary cases and we have to figure out how to apply it in practice, but let's just get the concepts down and then we'll pack the rest of that over zingers. Fine. Okay, so now the question becomes, what's the hesber behind this sheet? So what's the lumness behind this you know, wacky qualification that Rashi's having and the Rashi we're having for the concept of segregation? Mordechai.
Well, if you recall that it's a kavana, it's been split into two, so that would seem to indicate that segregation will equalize, but that's from a hundred.
Okay, good. Good. Exactly what the Mishmaris Chaim says, Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg plugs in Rav Chaim's Chakira to analyze this issue. So let's chazer over again Rav Chaim's Chakira from the last 2 weeks. And as Mordechai plugged it in, he uses that to analyze this issue. So once again, Rav Chaim had his Chakira. How do we understand the concept of segregation? Segregation tells us that when I do activity A, which in and for itself is permissible, and it's inevitable, it's going to cause a secondary consequence, which is Asur, even though I'm claiming I'm not intending to do activity B, but we treat it like there's kavana. We treat it like there's kavana because it's inevitable. And the question we've been asking for the last 2 weeks is, what's the pshat? How do we generate kavana? Why are we treating it like there's kavana when the person's claiming he's not having kavana? I'm just trying to do activity A. I'm not trying to do activity B. Why are you telling me that I'm having kavana for activity B? Why is this prohibited? So we had two basic approaches. The first possibility was to say that since the person has an awareness that A always causes B, that if he drags his heavy bench, it's going to make a groove in the ground. So deep down in the recesses of his mind, there's a certain subliminal acceptance of the fact that B is going to take place. And there's a certain subliminal intention to do activity B. He's accepting the fact that it's going to happen. He knows it's going to happen. That's construed as a type of subliminal intent. And I'll be in that street of like Kabbalah. So that was the first thought in Rav Chaim's Chakira, that the person's awareness that B is definitely going to happen is construed as a type of subliminal intent on B that's classified as a legal kavana. The second side is to say that a very different idea. If we don't start doing this whole psychoanalysis of a person that deep down in the recesses of his mind, he's having kavana on B. Lamaisa, the person is intending to do A. He's technically not having any kavana at all to do B. How then do we generate kavana? Why is psik resha going to be aser? So the second side is to say, as Mordechai pointed out, that since activity A always causes activity B, dragging a heavy bench always makes a groove in the ground. So legally speaking, they're not called two separate activities. They're considered to be the exact same activity. If A always causes B, then A equals B. dragging a heavy bench is the same thing as making a hole in the ground, because since A always causes B, they're not separate activities, they're the exact same act. So when you have kavanah on A, by definition there's kavanah on B, because B is included in A. You're having kavanah to drag a heavy bench, then you're having kavanah to make a hole in the ground, because since every time you drag a heavy bench, you make a hole in the ground, they're the same act, and so you're having kavanah, whether you like it or not, on activity B. So that is our ongoing chakira for the last 2 weeks in Psik Reisha. Is a pshat like the first side that we treat that your awareness that B is definitely going to happen tells us that deep down in the recesses of your mind is a subliminal intent on B? Or do we say there's no subliminal intent on B, you're just having kavanah on A? But since A always causes B, B is included in A, they're the exact same activity. So kavanah on A is automatically kavanah on B. So plugging that into this issue, we have this case here where, let's say, taking Rashi's case, I want to do activity A of pouring big droplets onto the Mizbeah. And inevitably, it's going to cause activity B of extinguishing the fires of the Mizbeah. So should we apply the din of Psik Reisha in this situation? Should we treat it like there's Kavanah on B, in which case this is going to be Aser? Should we not treat it like there's Kavanah on B? Says Rav Scheinberg that it should depend on our Chakira. So starting with the first side in the Chakira, the first side is to say that your awareness that B is definitely going to happen means that deep down in your mind, you're accepting it, you're having subliminal intent. If that's the case, then that should apply in the situation. Lamaisa, when you pour big droplets, you know that B is definitely going to happen. That should create the subliminal intent. Who cares if you could have done it in another way? You could have poured small droplets. But Lamaisa, you didn't. You poured big droplets. You know that that's going to put out the fires in this bath. That creates a subliminal intent. That should be problematic. So going with the first side in the Chakira, we have no way of understanding the Rashi in Tfachim, the Rashba in Shabbos, the Rashba in Yerushalmi, because Lamaisa, the person, he has this awareness when he did big droplets, when he closed the door to his house, he knew B was going to take place. He's having a subliminal intent. That should be problematic. But says Rav Scheinberg, if you move over to the second side in the Chakira, so now there's room to understand what's going on. Because the second side was to say that since A always causes B, so legally speaking, they're not called two separate acts. They're defined as one and the same act. If A always causes B, then A equals B. So now there's room to suggest the chiddush that Mordechai pointed out, that you could argue that when do we say A and B are the same act? Only if A always causes B. If A under all circumstances always causes B, so then they're defined as one and the same activity. But if you could do A in a way where it won't cause B, you can avert the psik ratio. Even if circumstantially you do it in a way where it is going to cause B, we don't say that they're defined as the same act. Let's say closing the door to my house. I can close the door to my house in many ways where there's not going to be a consequence of melechet tzad. If there's no creature inside my house, not including my son, but if there's no creature inside my house and I close the door to my house, so it's not going to cause any consequence of melechet tzad. So how can you tell me that now that there's a deer inside my house, closing a door is the exact same thing as trapping a deer? What do you mean? I can close a door in a way where it's not going to trap a deer. So since you could do A in a way where it's not going to cause B, you can't say that they're defined as one and the same activity. That's the argument that Rav Scheinberg says to explain these Rishonim. These Rishonim are going to maintain, they're going to work with the second side of Rukhan's Chakira, and they're going to maintain that we can only merge A and B and say that they're the same exact activity if A causes B under all circumstances. If A always causes B, so then you can say that the same act. But if you could do A in a way where it's going to avoid B, I can close the door to my house and if there's no creature, it's not causing melechet tzad. So even if there is a deer inside my house, can you really say that closing the door is the exact same thing as melechet tzad? They're not the same activity. Boraya, I can do it in a way, I can close the door in a way where it won't cause melechet tzad, and therefore we won't apply the din of psik reisha. So that is now part two of today's shir. We are plugging in Rav Chanan's Chakira to explain what's going on in this Rashi Vachem and the Rashi in Shabbos. Mishmar Chaim is arguing with the assist from Mordechai that they're going to be working with the second son of Rukhan's Chakira, and that's how we can understand why we don't apply the din of psik reisha in this situation. I apologize for the question. I just want to make sure we get to the halacha lemaisa. Fine. So for the last 10 minutes of today's share, I just want to go through two shilas that came up in the postkim that are predicated on our analysis from today. So let's start with shila number one. Rav Avadia in the Yevia Omer. was once asked the following shaila. In recent times, so they put the security cameras around the old city in Yerushalayim. And the question became whether it was permissible to walk to the Kotel on Shabbos, or I guess if I'm quoting Rav Avadia, the Kotel on Shabbos, in light of the fact that when you walk to the Kotel, so you're causing yourself to be filmed by the security cameras. So maybe that should be problematic. Causing yourself to be filmed should be problematic, and maybe that should be also. The way that the Makshin asked the question, he said, maybe it's Yatzah Shechara Behef Seido, that the benefit of visiting the Kosel is outweighed by the violation of causing yourself to be filmed, and so maybe it's something that we should avoid. Happens to be that like 13 years ago or so, Rav Nussbacher from Shalvim spent the summer in Landers giving shiurim. And when he's walking in the courtyard, I don't know if anyone is here for this. Were you here for that?
No.
So okay. I was here. So he was walking in the courtyard on Shabbos, and he became aware of the fact that there was a security camera, and he got like really, really nervous. He was like trying to avoid it, but he was mamish makbid on this. So this was a shaila that was posed to Rav Avadia. Is it permissible to walk in a place where you're being filmed? I know that, which basically means that we all have to be constricted to like one spot on Shabbos nowadays, but let's just go to the tshuva. Don't worry. yeah, don't worry. We're gonna be okay. But let's at least the sound surprise. You know, like the first time you learn Kriya sound stuff, like, it's a big deal. Okay. fine. So Rav Avadia starts out the tshuva by quoting a shaila that was once posed to the Karen Ladavit about 100 years ago or so. Following shaila was once posed to the Karen Ladavit. There was a certain person was in an army. And the rule in the army was you always have to carry around a picture of yourself wherever you go. You always have to have a photograph, kind of like a passport, whatever your papers, and you need to have a photograph wherever you go. And this person, for whatever reason, didn't have this picture, which was a very big deal. You know, you can imagine if you don't have the requirements when you're in the army, so especially 100 years ago, that was a serious misdemeanor. And so the shaila was, is it permissible on Shabbos for him to have a photograph taken of himself to acquire this crucial object that he needs for his safe being? So he needed to stand in front of a device that would take a picture of him. Is that permissible to do on Shabbos? So the Karen Ladavit says that since this Jew is not operating the camera, it's being operated in some other manner. When you stand in front of the camera, there's no Isra D'Raisa taking place. If anything, there might be issues with the Rabbanan. And since there's no Isra D'Raisa, this would be permissible, assuming that it's a goy who's operating the camera. Assuming that it's a goy operating the camera. So you're having a goy do, if anything, an issur derabanan. We always permit having a goy do issur derabanan for certain pressing needs. And so this would be considered to be a pressing need in this critical situation. And therefore, you're passing that this was permissible. You can stand in front of this camera as long as it's not being operated by a Jew. So says Rav Avadia, his takeaway from this is that standing in front of a camera is not going to involve any issur deraisa. And therefore, you know, that's how he starts out. There's no Yisrael Derais at all. It's operating automatically, and you're just standing in front of it. However, Rav Avadia assumes that there would be an Issa Derabana. He assumes that this still would be Issa Derabana. The fact that you're causing yourself to be, you know, you're causing the picture to be taken in a certain way, the pixels are going to line up differently, however it works exactly, when you stand in front of it. Therefore, he feels that there would still be an Issa Derabana. And so we're not out of the woods yet. So the question still becomes, so is there permissible to do this issur derabanan of causing yourself to be filmed by the automatic cameras on Shabbos? So Rav Avadia says that we have two mitigating factors in this situation, which he feels are sufficient to be made. The first mitigating factor is the fact that this is a davar she'ein miskaven. Listen, this person is doing activity A of walking. He's not having kavanah to do activity B of causing himself to be filmed, which we're calling an issur derabanan. Right, so of doing this is the Rabbana. This is a davar shein miskaven. And although it's a psik resha, it's inevitable that A causes B, but this is a psik resha delo nichaleh. The person doesn't care whether or not he's on film, especially if he's having a bad hair day. So maybe he doesn't want to be on film. And so this is a psik resha delo nichaleh. We have the shita of the Aruch. We have from shita number one tonight, shita's Aruch is that's mutter. Now we don't possibly the Aruch straight away, but the Aruch is still a big mitigating factor, particularly because this is an Issur D'Rabbanan, that a psik resha delo nichaleh on an Issur D'Rabbanan is one major reason to be mekel in this shaila. So that is mitigating factor number one, the combination of psik resha delo nichaleh plus the fact that this is an Issur D'Rabbanan. Then says Rav Avadia that we have a second mitigating factor, and that is the heter of the Rashba, Rashba and Rashi and Svachim. They had set down a limitation to psik resha. Psik resha only applies when activity A always causes activity B. If A under all circumstances causes B, then we apply the din of psik resha. But if you could do A in a way where it won't cause B, you could drop small droplets onto the mizbeach, then even if you do big droplets, we don't apply the din of segregation. Says Rav Avadia that a person can walk and not cause a secondary effect of causing himself to be filmed. I would say I'm doing that right now, but I'm probably being filmed. But right, okay. You can, a person can do plenty of acts of walking in a manner where it's not going to cause a secondary effect of having himself be filmed. So A doesn't always cause B. And since A doesn't always cause B, even in this case, even though in this case, circumstantially, A does cause B, walking will cause yourself to be filmed. But according to the Rashba and Rashi and Tvachim, we don't apply Pshat Resha. And therefore, according to them as well, this would be permissible. So we have two mitigating factors. Factor number one is the fact that it's a Pshat Resha, Dolo Nichlai, and this is the Rabbanon, I apologize for time. And factor number two is the fact that we have the Shita of the Rashba, and therefore Rav Avadia is Mekel on the Shaila. And he says that Rav Shlomo Zalman as well was Mekel. So that is all Shaila number one. We have 3 minutes left, so I just want to finish up. Fine. Shaila number two, which is also just as practical and probably even more lemaisa than the first Shaila, because I think no one's going to be mocked by the first Shaila here. But the second Shaila is a big time hot. And that is the issue of motion sensor lights on Shabbos. What is the halacha with motion sensor lights on Shabbos? If you're walking down the street Friday night and you're avoiding these houses, you're walking, you know, if a guy would be watching you walk across the streets, you know, they'd think like, what's going on with these guys? They don't know their way. So what's the halacha when it comes to motion sensor lights on Shabbos? Fine. So Rav Avadia there quotes a sefer, it's the same tshuva. In the same tshuva, he analyzes the shaila as well. And he quotes a sefer, Cheshev HaEfod, which is written by a dayan in England. And the sefer, Cheshev HaEfod, is mekel on this shaila for the same analysis from shaila number one with the video cameras. So let's plug in the same analysis to the case with motion sensor lights. First of all, we have mitigating factor number one. So once again, you're walking along the street and you're going to cause this light to go on. So we have mitigating factor number one, that this is a Pshat Resha d'lo nichlai. I'm doing activity A of walking down the street and it's causing activity B of having the light go on. Assuming that there's enough light from the street lights in the area, so you don't care about the fact, you're not benefiting from the fact that the light is going on. So now we have a Pshat Resha d'lo nichlai. So that is mitigating factor number one, the heter of the Arab. Then, says the Sefer Cheshev HaEfod, they have heter number two, the Shita of Rashi and Tvachim, and the Rashba. They had said it once again, that we only apply the din of Pshat Resha if A always causes B. If A always causes B, then we apply the din of Pshat Resha. But if A doesn't always cause B, we do not apply the din of Pshat Resha. So once again, walking doesn't always cause a light to go on, only if you're circumstantially walking by a motion sensor light. Does walking cause the light to go on? And so therefore, since A doesn't always cause a B, so that's a second reason not to apply the din of Pshat Resha, and therefore this would be permissible. So the Cheshev HaEfod and the Smash Rav Avadia as well are being makel on the Shaila because of the same analysis by the video cameras, they're makel on motion sensor lights. Now, this Shaila was posed to Rav Vosner in the Sheva Levi, and Rav Vosner in the Sheva Levi was asked this question about motion sensor lights. And the Shoal and the Shaila quoted this Shuva that Ravadia of Ravadia, didn't quote Ravadia's Shuva, but the Cheshev HaEfod, this Dayan in England, when he asked the question to Rav Vosner, so he asked Rav Vosner, is it mutter to walk by these motion sensor lights on Shabbos? And the Cheshev HaEfod said it was mutter because of these two mitigating factors, the Great Hill and Nicolai and the Rashba and Rashi. So what's your opinion on the matter? So Rav Vosner said that he felt that these are not sufficient grounds to be makel, that the Sekreshul and Nicholai and the Rashba are not sufficient grounds to be Mekel because we don't paskin like the Rashba. Ravazner says that we don't paskin like the Rashba and the Rashi and Tzvachim. So the second mitigating factor is now diffused, goes down the drain. All we have is the first one of the Aruch. And while that is a good consideration, it's not enough to be Mekel on the Shaila. So says Ravazner, that is not enough. I apologize for overtime here to be Mekel on the Shaila. But says Ravazner, he still feels you can be Mekel. And he says something that is super hyper abstract, which is not the kind of thing you say at 10:01 when we're winning in overtime, but I'm just going to say it and then it'll be a food for thought. Yeah, he says like this. We're finishing the sugya tonight. I don't think I've got overtime in like a year, but whatever. He says like this. I'll tell you what he says, and this is like super, super hyper abstract. He says that the din of Pshat Resha only applies in a case where when you do activity A, there's some physical reality that's causing activity B. There's something in Metzias that's causing activity B, which we can then attribute to you. So let's say I'm dragging a heavy bench outside on Shabbos. So when I drag this heavy bench, there are grooves being made in the ground. There's some physical reality that's being caused that we can point the finger to and say, you did that. We can attribute activity B to you because look, there's some physical reality that's causing activity B. Says Rav Vosner, when you walk by a motion sensor light, there's no physical reality that's causing activity B. If you were to be walking on a switch, let's say, of some kind of physical switch, so then we'd say, listen, activity A is causing the switch to be tripped. Look, you tripped the switch, you are now the person that caused activity B. But since when you walk by a motion sensor light, and you know, from the perspective of perception, we don't perceive any physical reality that's causing the light to go on, even though I guess scientists will tell us how it's happening. But in terms of the physical reality, there's nothing that we perceive that's causing it to go on. So we can't attribute that to you. We view it like it's happening by itself, and therefore it is perfectly permissible. So Rav Vosner was also Makel in the Shaila of motion sensor lights, and the Orech HaShabbos as well as Makel, they bring down Rav Vosner, Rav Eliashiv, were all Makel on the Shaila. There are other poskim from Machner, so just our classic disclaimer, don't pass them based on the app. There's a Yitzchak Zilberstein says to walk backwards to make it a Shinoi. So just to make your neighbors even more confused when you're zigzagging. And now you're like, by some houses, you start walking backwards.
When you set off their cameras so that, as well.
Right. Watching. So that's the extent to walk backwards, make the Shinoi. So I'm just, we're not posketing. I'm not posketing here, but there's a major, major basis to me. Makel, based on Ravadi's Makel for the Spartan and for the Ashkenazim. So Rav Vosner is Makel and the Orech HaShabbos is Makel and the Shaila. But once again, just please ask a Shaila before posketing. I apologize for time or overtime, but we'll talk afterwards. Great.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Happy Shabbos.